To the Enlightened Medicine Show. This is Dr. Valerie Olmsted, and I am the holographic physician, also known as the naturopathic physician. And I welcome all of you listeners, whether you're listening live or on the archives. If you are listening live, I am accepting calls. So if you'd like to get on and ask me some questions at any point, that's okay. I'm going to kind of give you a little ramble today about how to choose the right doctor. So at any point, if you want to call in and ask any questions on that, you are most welcome to. And I came upon this subject kind of through divine inspiration. I've actually written a book called How to Choose Your Doctor as If Your Life Depended on It, because it does. So this is kind of the short and sweet version of that. This is going to be something that you can take a few notes on if you like. And you can hopefully think about it before you go choose your doctor. There are a lot of things that happen with medical things. Now, I'm trying to put this in a pretty easy way so that I don't horrify people. But there are a lot of tragedies that happen, unfortunately. And I'm trying to help you to understand the role that intuition has in this. If you do not use your intuition, you can get hurt or killed. So, let's start off with the basics. When you need a doctor, usually it's pretty obvious. You know, you have something, somebody says, oh, you better get your sugar diabetes checked, or you better get your heart checked, or maybe you broke a leg or something. That's a given. You know, you're going to end up in the emergency room probably, getting your leg reset. If you have an accident, obviously go to the ER. There's different types of doctors in the conventional medical world. There's the MDs, which are allopathic, and the DOs, which are osteopathic. Then there are different subspecialties within everything. So when you go to the emergency room, you get an emergency room doctor. These guys are usually up on the latest techniques, and they've got all the fun toys, and they see people only on the emergent basis. So you don't go and check up with an ER doc. You know, you go there, you get whatever your emergency is taken care of, and then you go to your regular doctor. Your regular doctor is the one who is going to prescribe for you, the one who is going to follow you up and make sure that everything is getting healed the way it's supposed to, and that type of thing. The emergency room is not where you go when you've had the flu for 3 weeks and you're tired of it. That was one of my biggest complaints when I worked in the ER. You know, people would come in at 3 o'clock in the morning and just be hysterical and complaining. They'd had the flu for 3 weeks, and we're looking at them and saying, what is wrong with you? You don't go to the ER with a case of the flu unless you've, you know, got terminal flu, which nobody had. So just be a little bit judicial about how you're going to use that type of service. It's for emergencies. Now, a lot of people will use that because emergencies are usually paid 100% by your insurance company. However, insurance companies are cracking down on that now, and if they find that your case was not an emergency, it doesn't matter if you thought it was, they will not pay. So there's a lot of things to consider. Other doctors, what you usually see first is either a general practice physician or an internal medicine doc or a family practice doc, and they have certain specific things that they look for. They have many more years that they have to do some internship with in order to be board certified in these specialties. If things are not ferreted out by those doctors, then you're going to be shuffled off to a specialist, to a nephrologist for your kidneys, to a hepatologist for liver, to an oncologist for cancer, things like that. So normally your regular physician is the one who's going to do the workup and come up with what they think is a proper diagnosis and then send you on to the specialist. So that's one of the main things that that you need to understand when you're getting shuffled from doctor to doctor. Now, before I go on, let me explain to you why I'm doing this on this particular show. As I've said before, I'm not interested in doctor bashing. We all have our parts to play. We all have different skills. We all have different things that we're interested in. So basically, my interest in this whole thing is to help people to understand so that they're not needlessly blaming their doctors. And I can't tell you how many people come into me and the first thing they do is tell me how awful their MD is. And what it turns out to be is that they don't understand how the system works. And they don't understand that it's not necessarily the MD that's the problem. You know, it could be the insurance company. It could be the particular medical entity that they're working through, you know, one of the larger healthcare systems or something. You know, they are really kind of, how do I put this? They're kind of tied down to a certain set of rules. So their rules are different than the rules that you or I might think are wonderful, because they're dictated to you by the insurance companies and by the corporation that hires them. So, for instance, you may decide that you need a specimen of something because you're really worried. And so you go into your HMO and you go to your general practice physician, and he says, it doesn't look like anything. And you say, well, I want it biopsied. And he says, no, I'm not giving you a referral to a dermatologist because I don't think you need it. Well, that doesn't make you very happy, does it? Because you've got some weird growth on you. You want to know what it is. And you're worried about cancer. You're worried about, you know, who knows what, infestations, whatever. And you want that thing taken out and examined, and all you get from your doctor is no. Now, there are many bad cases where the doctor has been wrong. And, of course, that fuels everybody else's fears, and they're all worried. Oh, no, you know, it's this and it's that, and, you know, it shouldn't have been this way. And, unfortunately, there are some of those things that happen. In fact, I had a patient that went through that. Doctor refused to remove a basal cell carcinoma in his nose for 2 years. And when he finally got it off, they never told him to stay out of the sun, so he was in the sun 16 hours a day. And shortly thereafter, he ended up with stage 4 melanoma of the liver. And at that time, it was too late, and nobody could figure out how he got this melanoma in the liver. You know, and I looked at it and said, well, looks like it's been there for a while. So those kinds of things do happen. So at this point, let me remind you, there are no guarantees in life. You just do the best that you can, but your intuition is really, really important. And everybody has intuition. You don't have to be psychic to have intuition, okay? So let's go back. I digress. Let's go back and talk about the normal physicians for the what we call normal or conventional medicine. They are not traditional, by the way. Naturopathic physicians are traditional doctors. MDs and DOs are conventional doctors. There's a big difference. Naturopaths are using traditional methods that have been around sometimes for, you know, 5,000 years or so. Conventional doctors are more Western medicine. So when you go to your doctor and you get shuffled through all these other doctors, it's in an attempt to find out what's wrong with you quickly. And people have kind of gotten into the, you know, give me the magic pill type of mentality because of the advent of modern medicine and what was accomplished as far as disease and childhood illnesses and things like that. So people have kind of gotten used to getting a pill and getting well. That seldom happens anymore. It would be nice if it did, but it seldom does. So people do not understand when they get shuffled on. And sometimes it's a long process before you get to the next guy. I have patients who've been to 39 specialists, not GPs, specialists, and no one can help them. The reason no one could help them, I believe, is because they are forced to perform to the dictates of the insurance companies or the corporations that they work for. And by that I mean that they don't have the time. In order to find out what's wrong with someone, you have to spend some time, especially if they've been to all the specialists and nobody could figure it out. That's a really big red flag for me. When somebody tells me that, I know that no one has taken enough time or done a thorough enough history to really figure out what's going on. So that's my cue to take as long as it's going to take. And I've actually had one patient, it took me 8 hours to do her history and physical because she was so complex, had so many levels to go through. And, you know, most docs would say, you're crazy. You know, you're not going to take that kind of a time. You got 15 minutes. And, yeah, they do have only 15 or 30 minutes. But the way that I practice, I have as much time as it takes. And I schedule my day to be that way, and I schedule my fees to be that way. Because I've found that the only way I can help these people is to really get into their business. So I'll ask them what happened all the way back to the time that they were in utero. I will ask them what happened to their parents before they were conceived. Some of them have past life experiences they tell me about. Some of them I intuit as I'm talking with them. Sometimes I see, you know, a flash of vision or something while I'm working with someone. And I had that happen with the lady that took the 8 hours for the history and physical. I was doing acupuncture on her. And all of a sudden, I flashed on this battle scene, and I saw how she was hurt. And I saw how they tried to repair her. I guess you would call it on the etheric or in the astral or something. I saw all that. And I saw that it was a rush job, and she was not repaired correctly, and this is why she hurt. So as soon as I told her that, she went into meditation and came back and said, oh, yeah, well, they did this and this and this and this. I said, well, wouldn't that just explain all of your symptoms? So we started treating based upon that and, you know, still did the normal types of treatments, you know, supplements and, you know, different pharmaceuticals and acupuncture and things like that. Very quickly, she was down to 50%. Of the dose of medication that she had been taking. And this woman had been on pain medication for 25 years, escalating doses. She was on all kinds of other types of medications to try to potentiate the pain medications. She didn't have a life anymore. So within a very short time, you know, a couple of weeks, she was able to have more energy, more endurance, got her life back. And now, about a year later, she looks completely different. And people keep telling her how wonderful she looks. And she says, well, I feel wonderful. Now, she's not off of all of her medications yet, but I figure a year's not too bad considering she's had 25 years of this stuff. Now, what are the chances that your MD or DO is going to be able to do that? Yeah, probably slim, because they have been brainwashed into thinking that this is not possible. Which brings me to the next part. How do you find someone who is going to be able to intuit to feel what's going on with you? You have to interview. And it's important for you to remember that the doctor works for you. You don't work for them. Now, let me say that again. The doctor works for you. You are paying the doctor, or your insurance company is paying the doctor for you, and that's part of your benefit package. So remember that. If you are not happy with what's going on, you have the right to say something. And I know there's a lot of docs out there that are going to really be mad that I said this, but it's true. And you need to understand that, because this is not like a favor that the doctor is seeing you, okay? This is an energy exchange. You're going in, you're saying, I have this problem, can you help me? And the doctor usually says yes, and here's what we're going to do. But at some point, they forget, and they consider the patient to be a big pain in the butt. The more questions you ask, the less they like it. Unless you get somebody kind of wacko like me that really, really likes to ask the questions. So when you're looking for a doctor, interview them. Have your list of questions ready. You know, ask them where they went to school. Ask them what kind of training that was. You know, where does that rank, you know, in all the schools? Are they in the top 10? Was it the bottom of the heap? Doesn't really matter, but, you know, ask them those things. Find out more about the doctor. Ask the doctor what their life's purpose is. And if they never thought about it, that's not real good. And ask them what got them into healing. You know, why did they want to become a doctor? And what's the most satisfying part of their job? What's the least satisfying part? You know, what are they the best at? And what kinds of things do they refer out? These are all things you need to know. And you need to know how they're going to react with you. So, for instance, when people come into me, I give them the lecture about, you know, don't waste my time and your money. If you're not going to do what I say, that's okay, that's your choice, but I don't like to be wasted. So it doesn't matter how much money they throw at me. I'm not happy with that situation, and I won't take patients on that are just going to give me lip service. And in fact, I fire my patients regularly. Not all of them, but you know, I've had a few that I've had to fire. And I had one that called me up and said, "You're going to have to fire me." And I said, "Really? Why?" And she said, "I just can't manage to do any of the things I know I should be doing." I said, "Then you need counseling. You need to go to psychological counseling and find out why you think you're not valuable and why you think you don't deserve to be well." So she did. So these are the kinds of things that a good physician is going to do for you, is find out how you work. You know, what's going to work for you? What are your issues, which is mental, emotional, and physical, and oftentimes spiritual? And how do you operate? If they don't know how you operate, how you tick, then how the heck are they going to help you? And if you don't know how they operate, then you have no right to get mad at them when they don't do something the way you like. You know, some docs are very standoffish. They won't smile at you. They won't look at you. They just come and scribble things down on the chart. And I've had people say to me, "Oh, you know, lousy bedside manner, but, you know, he's really a great doc." And I'm always curious. And I look at them and I say, "Now, how do you know that? The man has not said five words to you. You know, how do you know that's a good doctor?" And it's usually, "Well, somebody says he is." And so you kind of go, I don't know if I'd want to be trusting my life to someone else's hearsay when the physician will not even talk to you and won't look at you. I think that's a problem. But that's me. You know, you may have a different perspective on it. Sometimes they act like they're doing you a huge favor when they come in and talk to you. Sometimes they're so happy to see you and they'll work with you. For instance, if you're into natural medicine, which I presume you must be or you wouldn't be listening here, then what is it that you want? How do you like to work? I always ask my patients that. If someone comes in and I say, "Well, I'm going to tell you what I think is going to work the best for you," you tell me whether it's going to work for you on your end. And, for instance, I might say, "Well, I think, you know, a course of acupuncture would really help." And they say, "Oh, I can't do that. I'm terrified of needles." I say, "Okay, we can use homeopathy, or I can do electro-auricular acupuncture, which is no puncture. You know, there's a lot of things that we can do. We can use light wands. We can use herbs. You know, there's all kinds of things that you can do to make someone comfortable. And I guess the difference between naturopathic medicine and conventional medicine is that conventional medicine is cookbook medicine. So you're going to get the same treatment for every person, pretty much. And there are things called SOPs, standard operating procedures, in most hospitals, where you have a book with all the SOPs, and you treat everybody the same way. The problem with that is it might work in an emergent state, but it does not work in a chronic or preventative state. So what a naturopath does is look at each person individually and say, "Okay, you know, what's going to work for this person? What is their pattern?" And I tell people I'm big on patterns. You know, I really need to see what's going on with them. I need to know how they think, and I need to know what's important to them. When I do that, I'm often successful, because I've tapped into something nobody else has. And so, of course, it works because, number one, the patient is compliant, and, number two, it's something that they like. So particularly with the blood type diet, you know, a lot of you that listen know that I'm a proponent of that for a lot of good reasons, mainly because it works. And the first thing I do with people is tell them, give me 3 weeks of being absolutely strict on this. Don't vary by a mouthful. After that, I'll teach you how to cheat. And then they're happy, because they might think, "Oh, my God, I can't give up chocolate cake." And I tell them, you don't have to give it up. What you have to do is not eat it every day, you know. And instead, you know, make that a treat once a month or something, depending on the blood type. Or somebody else says, "Oh, I love ice cream." Maybe they're of the blood type that should never put any ice cream in their body. I tell them, "Okay, but this is what the ice cream is going to do to you. And so now let's reverse that, and let's, you know, give you a little bit of ice cream here and there. But don't sit down and eat the whole half gallon." By doing that, by giving them permission to not feel deprived, I get better compliance. And my point about all this is, if I hadn't sat and talked with that person and really gotten into their stuff and found out what they like and dislike and what their patterns are, how could I do that? You know, instead, that person would be coming back and going, "I can't do this. Oh, I had chocolate cake. Oh, I had ice cream. And, oh, you know, I had it every night. And, I don't know what's wrong with me." And then the doctor would go, "Tisk, tisk, tisk, you really need to not do that." And the next time they came back, it'd be tisk, tisk, tisk. And pretty soon they'd go, well, you know, obviously this is why you have this problem. And, you know, I think that's kind of a cop-out. And rude, besides. Rude and nasty. So I would suggest that you interview your doctor well. For instance, if you're overweight, do not go to a skinny doctor that hates fat people, because they won't be able to help you, first of all, because they've always been skinny. And secondly, they have a loathing for you, so there's not going to be any rapport there. You know, if you have diabetes, you go to someone who either has had someone in the family that has it or thinks it's extremely easy to take care of that particular problem and doesn't judge you. If you have some kind of infestation, the standard thing now is if you think you've got worms or some kind of parasites, you go into most of these places, and especially if you bring anything in with you, which they call matchbox sign, if you bring little pieces of stuff that you found that look odd, they will tell you that you're crazy and they'll give you an antipsychotic. I've had quite a few people that have had that experience. You know, they've gone to one of the bigger diagnostic clinics and nobody even looked at the stuff. They didn't check the wound. They didn't look at anything that the patient brought in. They just immediately wrote them out a script for Buspar or Prozac or, you know, whatever. And I have said to them, you can still have worms and be crazy. They're not mutually exclusive. So, you know, you need to check these things. If you have a doctor that's ignoring you, why the heck are you going to him? Ask yourself that question. I meet so many people who are so disgusted with their doctors. And the first thing I ask is, why are you going back? Now, on the other hand, I have a lot of people that complain about everything. And when they come in to see me and they're complaining immediately, the first thing I do is I put down my pen and I just kind of look at them and I listen. And then I inform them that I'm not intending to take over from their other doctor, especially if it's an MD or a DO. I'm not interested in, you know, stealing everybody's patients. But I tell them, you know, it's in their best interest if they stay with an MD or DO due to their insurance or their Medicare issues or something like that. And I happen to know several of the docs here in town, and I know they're good people. So I tend to tell people, think about it, because, you know, you're going to lose this and this and this, and this other doctor can do this for you. And, you know, don't blame the doctor because he doesn't have the time or, you know, he can't order this for you. He's being dictated to by a businessman. And, you know, the bottom line is not a good thing to have to deal with. And my example of that is I used to work at a hospital that was doctor-owned years ago. This was in the 80s, early 80s. They transferred, they sold out and went to a corporate hospital. Now, the reason they sold it was because they were losing money hand over fist. So they sold it to this corporation, major corporation. And the corporation immediately came in and fired at least half of the staff. Half. Which meant that the rest of the staff then had to do double duty. Then they came in and they cut the pay. Then they made promises such as, well, you know, do this and we'll increase your pay 5%. Never happened. And they consistently did things like that. They consistently got cheaper and cheaper equipment and things. You know, because to them, the only important thing was the bottom line. And yes, there is a place for business in healthcare, but it's gotten way beyond where it should be. And when you consider only the bottom line and you don't consider the best for the patient, then you've got a problem. And I believe this is one of the reasons why we have so many ill people in the United States. We have so many people that die in hospitals. So it's kind of like the rat race syndrome. You know, you've got too many rats crowded into one little space. And not enough food, and no place that you can go and be by yourself. And after a while, they all go crazy. So I've seen a lot of crazy things happen in hospitals. And any sane person observing what I've observed would have said, what is the matter with you people? You are insane. You know, this stuff does not work because of this. And why can't you see that? And they glaze over. You can watch it happen. And you know that they're not hearing you. They don't get it. Because they think that just because they can do something, it's a good idea to do it. And there's a lot of things that we can do. You know, just ask anybody that got experimented on in World War II. There's a whole lot of things you can do to a human body, but it's not a good idea to do it. And if they don't think further down the road, then that creates a huge problem. And for instance, I was watching television one night years ago, and there was this big blast on the news, you know, brand new medical procedure that will completely take away nerve pain. And so I thought, wow, that's amazing. And I tuned in, and what they had decided was that they were going to electrify the sciatic nerve on people that had intractable pain down the leg and in the lower back. They were going to fry it with electricity, in effect destroy it. And they thought that was a great idea. And all I could say was, oh my God, they've totally lost it. Because the nerve is not only something that pain travels up and down, it's also something that creates movement within the muscle tissue. You need innervation. If you don't have innervation, then you have a wasting disease. So you'll see like one leg will be half the size of the other one because there's no innervation to it. So that type of stuff is just horrifying. And it's like if someone has worms in the gallbladder, they take the gallbladder out. And my question has always been, why? Well, why? Because it's simple. They don't have to worry about it leaking. They just take it out. They sew and cauterize, and poof, it's done. But then the person is without the gallbladder. And 30 or 40 years down the line, or sometimes sooner, that person will go into really bad intestinal malabsorption, which means they eat and it doesn't get absorbed. Meanwhile, they're doing without their fatty acids because the bile is an emulsifier and it's supposed to break up your fatty acids so that you can absorb them. And they're doing without all these things because these doctors, in their great wisdom, have neglected to remember that you have to have bile acids and pancreatin and all these other things that are going along with the fat. Now, the reason the gallbladder thing is so serious is because the gallbladder is not just a sac. The gallbladder is a sac that responds to chemical messengers. So when a fatty meal is detected moving through your intestines, the messengers go up and tell the gallbladder, release a bunch. And the gallbladder goes boosh, you know, and releases a bunch of bile, which then goes down and emulsifies all the fatty acids, kind of like soap. So it goes down and it breaks it all up so that some smaller particles and it can get absorbed. And then you are able to function. You need your fatty acids. You need them specifically to create insulation for your nerves, but in a whole lot of other processes too. So what I find with people that have had this kind of surgery is that they are getting nutritionally deficient quickly. And, you know, our parents' generation was better able to handle that than we are because they were better nourished. So each generation, it becomes harder and harder. So there's things like that that go on that are normal practice. And I would bet you can't find a surgeon any place in the United States that will open up your gallbladder, scrape the worms out, treat it, and close it back up. I bet you can't. If you can, let me know because I'll refer a bunch of patients to them. So this is one of the problems that we have with our so-called modern medicine. And before I go on, let me give you the toll-free number because that's a little bit different. It's 1-877-876-5227. And again, that number for call-in is 1-877-876-5227. I'll be glad to answer your questions. And let's go on now to what you do after the interview. So you're sitting there in the doctor's office and you're looking at the pretty plaques and the pictures of the kids and the awards and things like that, and you're asking these questions. Is the doctor happy to answer your questions? Does the doctor seem like they want to work with you? And this is a big thing. Oftentimes, doctors will just say, well, you know, I've got to work on anybody that comes in the door. I am not one of those. If I get any hinky feelings from somebody, I won't work with them. And I'll tell them it just doesn't mesh. And I want to do my best work for my patients every moment that I can. So if it's not meshing, no, sayonara. It's like, okay, I see what the problem is. You know, why don't you go see this person? I think they would be better suited for you. But for me, I can already tell that we're not going to work together. And, you know, possibly that's intuition. I don't know. You know, if you go to your feelings, if you ask your heart is never wrong. So if you get into that space of love and you ask yourself a yes or no question, you normally find if you're supposed to do something, your heart will do a little flip of joy. And no matter how crazy it sounds, I mean, I've done things in my life people thought I was totally nuts, but my heart did the flip for joy. And it's always turned out to be right. So, you know, years down the road or even, you know, the next day even, sometimes people say, wow, how did you know? Well, I knew because I listened to my heart. And if you can really get into that space, that's going to be the best thing for you, because then you don't have to wonder and worry. Just ask your heart. So, you're sitting there with the doctor. You think that maybe there's some rapport. You like what the doctor has said. You like the way the doctor works. And ask him, you know, if I have questions, can I call you? And normally they'll say, well, you can call anytime. And then ask them, are you going to talk to me and answer my questions? And most of the time they'll say, well, the nurse will give me the questions, and, you know, if I have time, I'll call you. Otherwise, you know, the nurse will deal with you. Or sometimes, you know, you'll call and you don't get an answer at all. That's not good. Sometimes you call and you don't get an answer because the answering service has not gotten the message completely over to the staff. Sometimes things get lost, so you can call again. But the main thing is you need to know how the communication is going to go, particularly if you have a serious illness. If you have something that's life-threatening, chronic, degenerative, emergent, whatever, you need to know that you can talk with that physician. You need to know that they understand your concerns and that they have your best interest at heart. And this is important. Of course, this is all important, but I have seen surgeons, for instance, whose motto is, a chance to cut is a chance to cure, which horrifies nurses, by the way, because we saw a lot of unnecessary surgeries being performed. And I say unnecessary because things could have been alleviated very easily with a change in diet, with a little exercise, whatever. But when somebody walks through the door, I think sometimes some of these guys see $10,000, $150,000. You know, it's perhaps not the best way to see a patient. But I have seen some of that. We had cardiovascular surgeons years ago that used to perform what we call the cabbage 0.5. And the cabbage is the arteriovenous bypass, you know, or the open heart surgery where they do the bypass graft. And when we said 0.5, we meant it was totally unnecessary. And, you know, you can only open up the chest so many times to do this kind of surgery. So that was a bad thing. I've seen other doctors that did not tell a family that the family member was terminal, and that continuing to do what we were doing was going to cost them hundreds of thousands of dollars. I've seen one person who was cardioverted, and when that didn't work, then went into massive shocking. And so, you know, and you see the paddles come out, and you shock somebody so many times, you literally fry the tissue. This went on for 3 days for this person, so they're being tortured to death. And each time that we had to call a code on that person, it was another $15,000. So these are the kinds of things you got to kind of watch out for. And what you need is someone who is going to talk honestly with you. Now, you can usually turn to an RN for that, because nurses are supposed to be patient advocates. And if you find one who is really concerned with the patients and with their best interest, then you're ahead of the game, because they'll tell you what's normal. They'll tell you what to expect. They'll answer your questions. If you don't know one, then ask around. Ask your friends. And if you're looking for a doctor, ask your friends. Well, do you like your doctor? How does your doctor work? You ever get a phone call back from them? Do you ever get your questions answered? You know, and what happens if the doctor's on vacation? Who takes over? So these are all questions that you might want to get answered. Now, the next thing is intuition. If you go into the doctor and the doctor says, well, you know, I want to do this biopsy, and you say, nah, I don't want to do that, doctor says, okay, shrugs and lets you go. The question that I have is, are you not doing the biopsy because you really think that you're okay? Or are you not doing it because you're afraid that you're not? Mm-hmm. That's what I thought. My advice in that situation is, if the doc thinks you need a biopsy, you can always get a second opinion. Get a third opinion if you need, or a tenth opinion. You know, get whatever you need to make an informed decision. Don't lay it all on the doctor, but go and get what you need and listen to them. You know, you're paying the doctor to give you advice. It's like when you go to an attorney, you pay the attorney to give you legal advice. If you don't take it and you get in trouble, that's your problem, isn't it? Same thing happens with health. And I've often said that to a couple people, you know, why are you paying me? You don't do anything that I say is going to work. I know it's going to work because it always works. So why are you not doing this? And at that point, I usually tell them, you know, you can just drop a check in the mail to me. You don't have to come in if you just want to spend your money. I accept donations. That kind of wakes them up most of the time, not all the time. So if you have a need, pay attention. And even if it's the dreaded C word, you know, most of the cancers can be reversed. There's lots of things out there, and chemotherapy is not the best way to go, okay? That's like last-ditch effort. And I know there's a lot of docs that are going to get mad if they hear that, but it's the truth. And we have known for at least 20 or 30 years that chemotherapy causes secondary and tertiary cancers because it's poison. There are things that they can do with chemotherapy to reduce the amount of chemotherapy that they're giving you, but they won't do it. For instance, CoQ10 can cut the amount of one of the pretty intense chemotherapies down to half, which thereby decreases the toxicity by half. But you can't get an oncologist to do it. Now, why? You know, this stuff has been investigated for over 50 years, and they will not use this non-toxic, harmless, wonderful substance. So all I can say is just be careful. You know, you need to really have your discernment hat on when you go to get a doctor, and especially if they tell you you have a problem. And I always tell people, you know, go check it out with someone else. You don't have to believe me. Here's what I think's going on. Now go see somebody else and see what they think, and let's do these tests. You know, let's see what's going on here or there. And it's a good thing for you to understand also, listeners, that medicine is not a science. It's an art, and we practice it. Things change all the time because of the knowledge that we get. Now, I remember years ago we changed the way we were treating ventricular tachycardia, and we found out that the way that we had been treating that pretty much killed off half the patients. But we didn't know. Nobody knew. And so we kind of sat there and went, wow. You know, here we're trying to save them. We didn't know this little piece of information. And so we did exactly what we shouldn't have done. And I'm not talking about just the ER where I worked. I'm talking about everywhere. So there are things that get changed, you know, from time to time. It's a good thing to check things out. If you have a doctor that never goes and gets any CMEs, never learns anything new, that's a problem unless they're doing something totally harmless, which most of them aren't. So you need to make sure your doctor is up on whatever it is that you need to know about. Now, we can't know everything. You know, we're all busy. There's so much information out there. We tend to go after the things that we really enjoy. You know, I enjoy doing different things, but there are certain things I just don't deal with because I don't see that many patients. For instance, I don't deal with a lot of kidney stuff because I don't see people that have kidney problems. I see people that have diabetes and heart disease and strange things. You know, I see people that have the medical mystery stuff going on. So I tend to go off in those directions, and I tend to blend in my intuition and the spiritual stuff too, because that works. And some psychotherapy, you know, all that kind of goes together in my practice. So it's different than it is for a lot of other doctors. And everybody's got their thing. You know, some of my colleagues love homeopathy. That's all they do. And other ones just love acupuncture and oriental medicine. I kind of like the mix myself. But find out how your doctor works. You do not want to find out when you're in an emergency. You want to find out before it gets to be an emergency. And I can tell you, I tried to caution my father with that. He had a doctor who had a big new clinic who ran people through like it was a meat market. I said, Dad, you need to find another doctor before you get into a bad situation because this guy will kill you. And he didn't do it, wouldn't listen to me. And finally, I came back to town and said, what's going on? And found out Dad was in kidney failure. This guy had basically not diagnosed him, just kept seeing him, you know, for months, told him he had the flu for 2 months, and he actually had digitalis toxicity. So he died a year later. And this was in spite of, you know, a lot of time in the hospital and, you know, ending up in ICU and kidney dialysis and all kinds of things. So it happens because there's not enough time. You've got to find somebody who's going to listen to you. But don't be frivolous. That brings me to the next point. If you want your doctor to listen to your questions, you have to have them organized. So go in with a list. Or what you can do is you can fax a list in or email it or something and ask the nurse, please get these questions answered for me. And she'll go ask the doctor. She'll answer whatever she can, or he will answer whatever he can, and then have the list for you so that you don't have to take up the doctor's time. Because, you know, time is money. So that way you can get your questions answered. Because I guarantee you, if you're sitting in there and you go, oh, I have some questions, the doctor's already got the hand on the door going, yes. And you go, doc's out the door. They're not going to stand there while you try to find something in your mind. So go in with your list of questions. You know, ask the help. Ask whoever you can. But I think if you give them a little bit of time, you know, they send that in, give them time to answer. There may be things that they have to look up. And I can tell you a couple of my friends are MD internists. And one of the things that they talked about was, oh, you know, I have to have an office in the back away from the patient rooms. I said, really, why? And they said, well, because I have to go in there and close the door and look things up. And I just start laughing. And they look at me and they go, well, you don't want the patients to see that you don't know. I said, why not? You know, most of the patients know you're not brilliant. You know, so they figure that out pretty quickly. So what is wrong with saying, let me go look that up? And I think most patients would like that a heck of a lot better, to know the truth rather than to be kind of hung out to dry while the doctor tries to figure out what's going on. And what they do is they go back in their office and they frantically look through the books, they get on the internet, they call up their colleagues, and then they come back and say, oh yeah, this is what's going on with you. And, you know, sometimes they're wrong. So it's up to you to be able to find what you need in a doctor. And this is the most important thing. You know, how many times have you looked, I mean, really searched to find the right auto shop to take your car to? Do you spend any kind of time like that on the doctor? I don't think so. Most people don't. How about when you're researching where to get the cheapest deal on furniture or get the best furniture? Or when you go to buy your house, you spend a lot more time researching that. But we're talking about your life here, people. So it's very important for you to take more responsibility health-wise. And those of you that have listened to me before know I'm big on responsibility when it comes to this stuff. It's your life. It's your body. And the outcome is something that you're going to have to live with. So I caution you to be careful with your doctor. Find the best one. And find them before you get really ill. And, you know, ask around. Ask other people. So that's just a little bit on how to find the doctor. And a little bit on what normally happens when you go to a doctor, why you get shuffled off to specialists. And I have to warn you, too, when you get shuffled off to a bunch of specialists, pretty soon nobody's going to listen to you, unfortunately. They'll start to think you're crazy or you're doctor hopping. I had one patient that said she was blacklisted, that no MD would see her. She was actually on some kind of list. And she'd make an appointment, and they'd call her back and say, I'm sorry, we can't see you. And she had a problem. It turned out to be a very easy problem. She was a juvenile diabetic, and she was getting migraine headaches. And it was very easily corrected by looking at a week's worth of her diet. That's all it took. This woman couldn't believe it. So I could tell you a million stories, really horrifying ones, too. But, you know, we all make mistakes. In any branch of life, there are the good ones and the bad ones and the mediocre ones. There are the ones that are criminal. There are the ones that are geniuses. And it's up to you to ferret out the best one for you. And they're going to be different. You know, a lot of people don't like my style because I'm real in your face. You know, I'll tell people the truth. And I laugh with them and cry with them and everything else. I get involved as if they're another person that I'm dealing with because that's what they are. And I don't see them as being beneath me. I see them as being equals. You know, we're both on a team to get them well. And I bring to the mix my best experience and my willingness to go to the end, to do everything that I can to help them. What they bring to the mix is their desire to truly be well. So how could we be anything but equals? So as a result, I get to have fun in my practice, and I get to be pretty successful and have those miraculous cures. Everybody thinks they're miraculous. All they are is the body working. You know, if you give the body half a chance, it'll heal itself. And that's what naturopathic medicine is about. You know, we find the obstacle, remove the obstacle, and then the body heals itself. And everybody says, oh, it's a remission. Oh, it's a miracle. And you kind of go, no, actually, it's science. That's the way the body is supposed to work. And so if you figure out what's keeping the body from working the way it's supposed to, it's pretty easy to get it well. Now, there are exceptions. There's genetic diseases. There's genetic diseases we can't test for. There's all kinds of new weird things because of the chemtrails and all the pollution in the environment and the GMO foods and radiation and, you know, God only knows what else. We've got so many things that are affecting us now that have never been on the earth before. And then you have a huge amount of people who, by the way, are probably, I don't know, at least 60%, are thinking negative thoughts all the time, who hate their life, who hate what's going on with the government and everything else, who are afraid. And all those waves are going through all around the planet. And so if you ever wonder why you got depressed all of a sudden, it's usually because some event happened somewhere that thousands of people felt that or thought that. So it's very important for your mental health to get yourself to a state where you can insulate yourself from those things and recognize what's you and what's not you. And I can tell you, I've had plenty of patients that came in with weird symptoms, and as soon as I got them meditating or sent them to a psychologist, you know, and kind of cleared up their mind, the symptoms mysteriously disappeared. Now, we would call that psychosomatic, but it goes beyond that. It's actually something that they're feeling on the etheric wave, so to speak. You know, something that they're feeling because we are all connected. We're all connected through our water. And yes, that means we're connected to the bad guys, too. We're all one. We just kind of forget that so we can play this game. So there is a connection. And it's your choice how you're going to deal with it, just like it's your choice how you're going to deal with your health problem. You know, you may not have a choice of whether you're going to get well or not. I tend to think that you do, but, you know, a lot of people will say, oh, I didn't have any choice. This happened to me. Okay, well, maybe. But you can at least choose the way that you're going to live in life. You can choose the way you're going to allow yourself to be treated. You can choose how you're going to think about it. And one of my examples that I always love to give is about my dad when he was ill. And he was sitting there in this lawn chair watching TV, and he had this scowl on his face. And I walked in the door. I said, oh, my God, you look like a pasty-faced old man. And he looked at me surprised, and he said, well, I am a pasty-faced old man. I said, get the heck out of that chair. And so I dragged his chair outside. I sat him in the sun. I said, you cannot sit here and watch court TV and divorce court and be happy. And he said, well, I like those. And I said, oh, Dad, come on. If you're going to sit around and watch that kind of crap all day, it's like watching Jerry Springer. You know, it's fascinating, like watching a train wreck, but, you know, once in a while, maybe. But when you do that kind of stuff every day, you're going to see the dregs of humanity. You're going to see all the bad things that people do to people. And it's going to affect you. First, it starts out affecting you mentally and emotionally, and eventually it becomes something that's physical, and you won't know what happened. You won't understand why the joy of life has gone. You won't understand why your heart hurts and why your lungs are filling up with fluid. But these are all emotionally caused things. For instance, in Oriental medicine, we know that the lungs are the repository of grief, and the kidneys are the repository of fear. The liver is a repository of anger. Gallbladder is resentment. Things like that. So whenever I see somebody coming in with these kinds of problems, I start asking them, what's going on? Mentally, emotionally, what's happening in your household? By doing that, I can clue into things that other doctors are not looking at. So please understand that how you think affects how you live. Your consciousness dictates who you are and what you go through in life. And if you're one of those people who lays in front of the TV and sleeps with the TV on, you're in trouble. And the reason you're in trouble is because whatever's on that TV goes directly into your subconscious, which, by the way, cannot tell the difference between reality and fantasy. And if you're asleep, there's no filter. So it all goes in there. And you'll find yourself being depressed, or being a shopaholic, or especially if you're tuned into QVC or something, any of the shopping channels. I had one lady in the other day, and she said, oh my God. She said, I fall asleep to one of the shopping channels, and then I wake up, and I dial the phone, and I buy something. Which horrified me, but I understand how it works. So there's a lot of that going on. If you want to be happy, if you want to be healthy, quit doing that. Okay? Is that making some difference, I hope? Try it. Go on a TV diet, you know? Just don't watch TV for 3 weeks at all and see how you feel. And you will see a definite change. You'll have more energy. You'll be happier. You'll be healthier. It's quite interesting. And by no TV, I mean no movies, too. You know, just don't put that kind of stuff in your consciousness. Go read a good book. You know, A Course in Miracles is a great book to read and work through those lessons. So hopefully this has helped you all. I hope that you understand a little bit more about how medicine works or the healthcare system in our country, about how doctors work. You know, by and large, doctors just love being doctors. I always tell people I love to play doctor. It's so much fun to figure out what's wrong with someone and help them. And that's my choice in life, you know. Other people choose to be contractors or rocket scientists or whatever. It's whatever turns you on. For me, I love to find out these things. And I hope that most of the doctors that are out there feel the same way. I know not all of them do. Some of them were forced into it. Some of them did it for the money or whatever, or the prestige. But when you find a doctor who really cares and loves getting people well, you found a keeper. You found someone who's going to make sure that they do the best they can for you. But it's up to you to find them. You know, don't choose somebody because they're just down the street and it's, you know, half a block from your house, or you only have to pay $15. Choose someone that's going to do the best for you. And I always say, don't worry about the money. If you need surgery, you need surgery. Pay them $10 a week if you have to for the rest of your life. Don't die just because you think that you can't afford to live. You know, that's a terrible state of affairs. But that's for another show. So I'm hoping that this has helped you. If you have any questions, please feel free to email me. That's info@drvalerienmd.com. That's info@drvalerienmd.com. And I'll be happy to answer your questions. And if you have any suggestions of someone that you'd like to hear on the show, I have a pretty well-rounded set of people that I pull in every now and then. And I'm willing to talk to people about a lot of things. Anything that has to do with health, I'm happy to talk about. And I don't care if it sounds weird. I think you know that if you've listened to me before. So thank you for listening. I really appreciate you tuning in. And I appreciate your attention throughout this. And I hope that I've been of some service to you. And until next week, be happy, be healthy, and blessings. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blog and service.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning in to our radio program. and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.